Welcome to another episode of the official Isuzu UA League podcast. Round three behind us, and once again, so many storylines to discuss.
Aaron Kunda, and he was being held, grappled. He's got it. Oh, he's off. Aaron Kunda, a second yellow card. Take the first incursion into the penalty area, and inside 35 seconds, Brisbane Roar open the scoring in Wellington.
What a sensational header. Apostolos Stamatolopoulos.
Kolakowski! Super sub sensation for the Glory!
And he goes for it! And finds the bottom corner! And Melbourne City lead!
Orgler round to keeper! Ali Orgler has won the point for MacArthur!
Plenty to talk about from the weekend. If it wasn't the original rivalry that caught your attention, you might have stoppage time winners, the Australia Cup and the A-League champions languishing at the bottom of the table. Lots to dissect. To do that, David Wiener with you once again. Thanks for your company. And I'm joined by Tom Smithies and David Davidovic. As ever, Tom, plenty to get stuck into. What was your moment of the weekend?
Wow, crazy, crazy weekend. My moment of the weekend, because a goalkeeper that I am at heart, I'm going to go for Tom Heward-Bell's incredible save. Absolutely
the heavy off my feet.
A game-changing save. It almost, even in replay, it looks impossible. But he pulled it off, and fair play to him.
On a weekend that we talk about the original rivalry, we have the original rivalry in the podcast. Dave, what was your moment of the weekend to stand up against Tom?
Well, it was going to be that until I heard the commentator snippets there. They were all up and about over the weekend. So that was definitely a highlight. But on a serious note, the Melbourne Victory Adelaide United original rivalry match on Saturday night was epic. It had everything. It had drama, tension, a great atmosphere, fantastic crowd down there at Amy Park. Had some fantastic goals, controversy. And to be honest, I know it's a big call at this time of the season. If we look at the ladder, it's perhaps not that controversial, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the grand final replay on Saturday night. I thought that was a fantastic game, and Melbourne Victory have come from a long way back. They're going very, very well this season. Adelaide United, they've just got this batch of young, fearless kids who are confident, almost cocky, and I just love the way they go about it.
How can it be a grand final replay if the grand final hasn't happened yet? Grand final preview, maybe?
Grand final preview. I was just checking that you were listening, Tom. So excellent. Full marks for your attention.
How many minutes are we into this show? 3 minutes. Just follow that around down in your notebook, Tom. We will come back to that at some point in the season. No doubt about that. Mine of many, as Dave said, up and about over the weekend. So much to enjoy. Just a moment of quality. Tolgay Arslan, the way he, literally the moment the commentary team on Friday night said, if Sydney FC can hold them, whoa, hang on a minute, and played in behind, 2-0 up, Sydney FC in all sorts, a moment of his quality, match-winning quality. He has shown that he is got immense pedigree. And the good news, Tom, is he is the star of A-League's All Access this week. So we get a very early glimpse into getting to understand a player who's come from Serie A, huge pedigree, and has landed in our league and is going to be a joy to watch over the coming months. Moving on, though, to, I feel like you're going to say something, Tom.
Just how wonderful he's been in three games plus the Australia Cup. I've loved watching him. And those, it is those no-look passes, those little, the ability to find the chink in any team's armour and get through it with those beautiful balls. It was a classic Melbourne City goal. That overlap, pull a team to one side, overlap on the other, play the pass through. It showed a little bit that City, back to the sort of muscle memory that they had under Kisnorbo. Which is a very encouraging sign for them. But yeah, he's a wonderful player.
That was a beautiful moment. You didn't actually say anything, and I just knew you wanted to say something that I didn't move on. But we will move on to the original rivalry. There is nowhere else to begin but with Saturday night's blockbuster.
Rushing away, Kiddo. The cutback is brilliant for Borrelli. He just can't stop scoring.
Yeah, and it ended Melbourne Victory 1, Adelaide United 1. But there is a lot to pick out of this game. On the scoreboard, it is all about Bruno Fornaroli, one Hiro Ibusuki getting the equaliser for Adelaide United. But where shall we begin? Tom, you covered this game for aleagues.com.au. We're going to talk about the Nestori Irinkunda red card at the end of this discussion when we get to the end of the chronology of this game. It is a big flashpoint. But before that was a game that, if anyone hasn't read it, have a look on aleagues.com.au. Your analysis piece of the game spoke about a match of immense quality, the type of quality that has made Dave go out on a limb and say this could be the grand final preview.
There was so much to like about this whole event, the crowd, the both teams, the way they played. The whole thing was fantastic. If you look at Victory, the way they attack and attack and attack in waves, she said to me that they're back. This is the Popovic style that we've seen in the past. He's given, he's put faith in young players. He's got pace up front. And Fornaroli, who at 36 is playing as arguably as well as he ever has done. And that it was such a phenomenal performance. The only thing missing is, as Popovic said, was the 3 points, and that was because they couldn't quite convert the chances. But for Adelaide, who weathered that storm, and at times they almost put sandbags down. They were, you know, digging in the trenches, holding on, staying in the game. And then when Roderick Miranda was sent off and they get the equaliser, and suddenly the game has changed, and Adelaide could have won it towards the end. The seesawing towards the end was phenomenal. Adelaide will take a huge amount out of that in terms of their resilience, the way they hung on at a possibly the most difficult away game they're going to play this season. Came away with a point, could have had all three, still top of the table, so much to like.
And all the hallmarks of a big occasion, Dave. Great crowd, great atmosphere and a cracking tempo and football match to boot off the back of it.
Yeah, it was. And again, worth noting, the double header, a lot of people were there to watch the Victory women beforehand, and it was a fantastic crowd. But look, in terms of Melbourne Victory, I mean, that attack, there were moments there where it was almost Harlem Globetrotters-esque with Mishash and Arzani and Fornaroli and Nishan Volupalai, who, you know, he certainly is holding his own in that front four and you know, keeping Ben Falami and Chris Economides out of that first 11, just the way they kind of get their foot on the ball and in that, you know, interplay between them, which will only get better as the season wears on, because this is the first season that, you know, each of them are playing together. They could have and should have put that game away. Again, huge credit to Joe Gauci, who was absolutely outstanding on Saturday night. And every time you see him, he just seems to grow. And, you know, Matt Ryan's obviously not going anywhere from a Socceroos viewpoint, but you know, when you look at that next generation of goalkeepers, I mean, Joe Gauci's absolutely on the front row of that grid. But yeah, it was just, you know, a fantastic attacking game of football. Arzani looked fantastic again. Mishash, I mean, the bulldozer was back at it yet again. I mean, you know, what a fantastic player to watch for young Australian players, because I think physicality has gone out of our game a little bit from a youth development viewpoint. But when you look at the importance of using your body as a footballer, you need to look no further than, you know, Mishash and even Fornaroli, who, you know, is very clever with the way, you know, he wriggles around and uses his body and keeps the defenders at bay. But yeah, so much to like about that game. But again, Adelaide United, they could have been two or three down, but they come back, they throw the youngsters on, attacking players. Carl Beard could have, you know, battened down the hatches and played for a draw, but he sent on Bernardo, he sent on Touré, and, you know, they almost had a bit of joy at the end. But, yeah, what a finish. It was outstanding.
Amazed it took you so long to mention youth development there, Dave. I just want to discuss one of your points there. Daniel Arzani, he started brilliantly. He set up two chances in the first 2 minutes. He was all over the place. And then sort of halfway through the first half, I thought he went off the boil. I thought he started to do, like, he had a shot from a crazy distance. And I thought some of his decision-making became a little bit questionable. The thing for me, the really encouraging thing for a Victory fan, is he either gets better or they'll bring Jake Brimmer in. I mean, the depth they have in that squad is frightening. I would love to see Arzani do that for 90 minutes. It was just seemed to fall away when things didn't quite happen. You know, there wasn't an end product. It was as if things fell away slightly.
Yeah, and he'll get better as it wears on. I mean, again, if you look at the amount of football that he's played over, you know, the last few years, I mean, I think it's, and obviously the knock on him has been the, you know, the ability to get through 90 minutes. So I think he's a work in progress. I don't think we see the best of Arzani until, you know, the back end of the season, but certainly plenty of glimpses, positive glimpses to take out of that game. But you make a really good point. I mean, Jake Brimmer's another one on that, you know, fantastic Melbourne Victory bench. Ray Marchand coming on as well. So, all of a sudden they've got depth and they've got options.
And just to go back to a few of the players you mentioned there, Dave, I think the interesting thing about Joe Gauci, who wasn't in the last Socceroos squad, great response to see him making what could have been that was a performance that kept Adelaide in it, Tom. Arguably, they're down 3-0. The game's over. Before we get to the drama, the equaliser, the red cards, the back and forth, victory could have put them away. I thought Tony Popovich's comments on Volupoli were interesting because there is good hype on him, doing really well, but he just pegged him back, said could have had 5 goals. So also making sure that for all the great work that Victory are doing, that they know that they got to have that clinical edge to get over the line. But in terms of new plays in our league, Mashash, he's impressive. He is so impressive.
He's got everything. He's got pace, close control, but as to Dave's point, terrific power as well. He can run through defenders or run around them. And he's done it more than once now. We've seen it against Sydney FC. We've seen it now on that huge stage. And he's a guy who seems to thrive on the big occasion. And he give him the ball and he just wants to run at players. But he makes smart choices. He set up that goal with such a clever cutback. Terrific run. So many players would just drive the ball across or even dink it across. But he pulls it back deliberately for Fornaroli, who meets it so sweetly. I mean, what a goal. It was just jump out of your chair moment.
With the game on the line, with Victory in a good position, Miranda, Dave, 2 yellow cards there. An experienced player, Popovich said he wasn't happy with the first yellow, but irrespective for an experienced player, that wasn't a great moment for him or for Victory. That said, they held on to take a point with them. So disappointing moment, decent reaction.
Yeah, and experienced player, also the captain. I think you expect more from your captain. He's a ripping guy, Roderick, and, you know, a fantastic player on the field. I mean, him and De Silva, that's as good a back two as you'll see in the A-League this season. But he's got to keep his head, especially when, you know, I mean, there could have been danger, but, you know, they're in their attacking third. You've got to keep your head. So, obviously, forced a reshuffle. Yeah, we saw Negro come on, and obviously, he came on earlier, and then Franco Lino making his debut, the Victory teenager as well. So it obviously, you know, caused some quick thinking on the Victory bench. But I don't think the Victory coaching staff would have been too thrilled with Miranda on Saturday night.
Especially not as the second tackle is borderline red. You look at it back, he comes down on Aaron Kunda's heel, come Achilles. Now, we're going to get on to the Aaron Kunda situation, and there's been fire at referee Alex King for what happened there. But there's not been much criticism of what could have been a very, very nasty tackle. And as Dave said, it's just outside the Adelaide box. It's not like Aaron Kunda's through on goal. It was an ugly tackle, and he was lucky to only get a second yellow for it.
So you mentioned Aaron Kunda. Part of what made this such a fascinating game was the ebb and flow, the ups and downs. It was a heated game, Dave. Not only was the quality of the football excellent, that was the atmosphere fantastic, but there were exchanges. You had Carl Vick going at Bruno Fornaroli. You had players nipping each other's heels. This felt like the rivalry of old. What did you make of that? And then how much did that lead to what we started to see there with, you know, it was Miranda, Roderick Miranda versus Aaron Kunda, and then even more?
Yeah, the Channel 10 producers, I think, got caught out by a bit of Bruno Fornaroli potty mouth, him and Carl Viet going toe-to-toe on the touchline. But, it, you know, great theatre, and Carl had some comments around Victorians late last week. So, good to see Carl being a parochial South Australian, as he always has been, born in Whyalla and coming through the system over there. But when you speak of South Australian products, I mean, Aaron Kunda is as exciting as we've ever seen. And he really took it to Victory. He was a handful. And I think that's where Victory had to think really carefully about, you know, who they brought on, you know, bringing on someone like, you know, Negro, a little bit more experienced as opposed to Lino. And, you know, Negro straight away, you saw that first foul, even though it was sort of, you know, in their attacking half, he was all over Aaron Kunda. You can see he already causes panic in the opposition defences. The actual incident that led to the red card, I thought that was clearly a foul on Aaron Kunda. So he was very unlucky not to get that foul. His reaction, he shouldn't have done it. I thought he was stiff, however, to get that second yellow card. I thought the referee could have just had a word to him by the letter of the law. Yes, it probably is a red card. I've got no doubt Tom Smithies will disagree with me on this one, but I heard Bruce Gitte's comments after the game, and I agree with him. I think players like young Nestor Aaron Kunda really need a little bit more protection.
And I also think in that context too, it was a fiery match. I think there's a couple of issues here because, and Tom, I'm keen on your point of view on both yellow cards. I think the first yellow card, I'd like to delve into a little bit deeper. I do agree with Dave that I think before the dissent was a clear foul. Should he have reacted in that way? No. And I think there's a separate issue to the refereeing decision here, which we'll get stuck into as well, which is that Nestorio Nkunda, who is a player we have such high hopes for, is 17. This is going to be a moment he will learn from. The club will rally around him. Clearly their language in the press already has been they will rally around him. And they're going to help him learn from this experience, because when he goes hopefully onto great heights in his career and progresses, he will look back at this moment and how he needs to react, both when he's got players clipping at his heels all game, probably in his ear all game, and then when a decision doesn't go for him, how he reacts so he can stay on the field. And I think in this sense, it will be a hopefully a making moment for Nestorio Nkunda. But we go back a step to the way that we got there. Your view on the officiating that led to that moment?
Well, let's go through it moment by moment, starting with the first yellow card. The fact is that he came in late and he made contact with a player at a point in the game where yellow cards are starting to be shown. And he didn't move away. He squared up. I can't remember who it was he actually squared up to. But
Ryan Teague.
But he makes contact with Teague and then squares up to him. I think more often than not, you're going to get a yellow card from that. But what happens straight after that is for a good 15, 20, maybe 30 seconds, Alex King and Ryan Kitto are talking to Nkunda, trying to calm him down. And you can see Kitto saying to Nkunda, listen to him. You can actually see him nodding and saying, listen, they're trying to calm him down and manage the situation. That's on 79, 80 minutes. Nkunda doesn't stop. Over the next 10 minutes, he keeps going. He's charging at everybody. He's talking at everybody. And the bigger context also of this is we had the referee's boss come in and talk to us, like he talked to a lot of people at the start of the season. And yes, they talk about protecting players from dangerous tackles, but they also talked about cracking down on dissent. And the issue that we all know exists in park football, where I've played over 35 football, where everybody thinks that they've got the right to scream abuse at the referee. And Nkunda had it, when King is talking, initially gives him the yellow card, Nkunda actually sort of puts his hand on his arm just for a second. All that sort of stuff he's got to learn not to do. And you hear Daniel McBreen, I was listening to the commentary back afterwards, and Daniel McBreen saying exactly that. He's got to learn to separate from his emotions, because if he goes to Europe, which he will do because he's such a phenomenal talent, people will identify that's a weakness in him and they'll be in his ear, and he's got to learn not to react. The fact is that he was given opportunities to calm down and he didn't. And he turned around and did something, like, it wasn't in isolation is my point. And I get what you say, Dave, that in that one moment, you could say maybe the ref could have just said calm down, but he had been saying calm down for quite a while and Nkunda didn't.
Yeah, well, I knew you were going to disagree with me. No surprises, but it was a free kick. And I understand once the referee made that decision that it wasn't a free kick, then, you know, it's game on. But yeah, it was... I did feel for him, you know, the young boy, and obviously, again, he needs to learn and mature really quickly. I think, you know, none of us sort of realise the challenges that, you know, he's going through on a personal level. I mean, he's only 17. There's a lot of hype. You know, he's no doubt got some, you know, challenges off the field, outside of football. But, you know, it was what was heartening to see was everyone trying to get around him and protect him. You know, he was, again, after the red card, I mean, you know, it was he was quite you know, volatile. But, you know, even Tony Popovich sort of got his arm around him, and the Adelaide bench went to him. And, you know, Marius, the director of football at Adelaide, you know, helped him down the tunnel. So good to see people getting around him. And, yeah, you just hope that he does, you know, take this as a real learning experience. But if you look at his game, the football side of things, I mean, outstanding and, you know, an absolute pleasure to watch once again. And again, there were so many knocks on Nkunda as to whether he'd be able to get through 90 minutes. Well, he did get through 90 minutes, you know, where, you know, up until this season, he's largely been an impact player. So, you know, huge progress from him from a football point of view. Hopefully he can learn and move on.
The 90 minutes thing is really interesting too, because at about 70, as it started to combust, I'm thinking, do you take him off? But actually, in the long run, Carl Viet keeping him on, which is no surprise given how many of the other youngsters he brought on with the game on the line, is only going to be a learning experience for Nkunda to deal with that environment, to still continue to push through. The reason why he was in so many flashpoint moments, Tom, was because he continued to have a crack. He didn't step backwards of it, and that's a great sign for his mentality to the other things he's going to have to learn from here.
This was what, his third game starting football. It was the guy is learning, the kid even is learning to how to play a whole game, 90 minutes of professional football. And I do have every sympathy for the emotions inside of him, particularly as I don't disagree, Dave. I think it was a foul beforehand. The difference is over time he's got to learn not to react. And I think you make an excellent point, Dave, that maybe Colvey could have pulled him out of the line of fire at that stage, because it was clear that he was so volatile and so brimming with emotion that at that point he'd already been spoken to by his own captain, by the referee at that point. Maybe the coach should have said, for his own protection, I'm going to pull him out and for his long-term benefit, sacrifice the attacking prowess of my team.
But such is his faith in him, he maintained it. There were a couple of moments in there just to round it out. I thought Tony Popovich putting his arm around him was that was a wonderful moment. He spoke both about arms. It afterwards. Both arms. Because in that moment, you know, Tony Popovich is the coach of Melbourne Victory, but he's a custodian of Australian football. He could see that Iran Kunda hadn't just got red, he was seeing red, and he protected him in that moment. Ryan Kiddo's leadership through that period I thought was immense as well. And actually, you can see the environment he's in at Adelaide, which is so good for him. Ibasuki, I don't know if you guys noticed in the first half, was raging about set-piece delivery. Before he scored one, he wanted them on his head earlier, and he actually was really having a crack at Iran Kunda. He was the first one outside of Kitto, I think, with him, with his arms around him as he got sent off too. So he's in a good environment there. And I think, just to add a bit more context, these aren't excuses. I think this is just the incredible environment and the expectation on him. I mean, he was getting booed for most of the game. So again, new experience for him. And this is a kid who I've always found in my dealings with him incredibly respectful. Comes up and shakes, once he's met you, come up and shake your hand the next time he sees you. Very polite, but very reserved. And he's now being put on this, you know, go win us a game pedestal. You know, when he's at Cooper's 20, 30 minutes after a game, he's making sure that every kid, and I use that word loosely because they're probably only 2 or 3 years younger than him half the time, have got their autographs signed or their selfies taken. So he's taken on that load. He's taken on that load. Now Australian football's on that journey with him to get him through the other side, of which Saturday night is a big, big learning curve. Let's see if he harnesses that moving forward, or whether that's something that is a recurring part of his game that he has to stand out. I've got no doubt. Hopefully in that environment, he'll deal better with it next time. So that was Saturday night, gents, a blockbuster game, more of those to come through the season. Enjoyed it immensely. Now, while we're talking about youngsters, by the way, before we get on to the rest of the round, just before we recorded on Monday, news of the Ollie Roos squad dropped, Dave, with 14 players from the Isuzu Ute A-League. I think if my maths is right, with 2 others on the train-on squad. Tony Vidmar has named a very strong-looking squad, headlined by the likes of Marco Tilio, Segesic as well, Neuenhoff. You can see the squad on keepup.com.au with all the relevant quotes that are with it. But your view on this squad, Dave, because it's a couple of friendly matches before key preparation for the AFC under-23s. It's a good-looking squad full of A-League's talent.
Yeah, spot on. Your stats are spot on as well, Dave.
My 14 maths. Of the excellent.
22 and 16 of the 24, inclusive of the train-ons, are from the Isuzu Ute A-League men's competition. And most of the players that are overseas were in the A-League last year, or pretty much all of them in the last couple of years. So big games against Saudi Arabia and Qatar, because the Olympic qualifying tournament is actually in Qatar early next year, 15th of April till the 3rd of May. Only 3 Asian teams qualifying for the Paris Olympics. So let's hope that the Ollie Roos can qualify yet again after doing it for Tokyo after a pretty long absence. But plenty of interesting names in there, even from abroad. It'll be real interesting to see the likes of Jacob Italiano in the squad, and Marco Tilio also being picked, coming back from injury. But from an A-League's point of view, Nishan Volupalai, we touched on him moments ago, but another deserved selection for him after a fantastic start to the A-League season. And the mail is that a real turning point for him, when you talk about the importance of international youth football, a real turning point for him was getting selected in one of these squads in the preseason. And the mail out of Victory was that he came back a different player, and that just really helped with his confidence. So it'd be good to see him in there. And, you know, the way he's going at the moment, I mean, he's absolutely in the calculations for a first 11 spot. But to be honest, so are a lot of the other players. Rafael from MacArthur, you know, Jakey Holman, also from MacArthur, fantastic start to the season. Ryan Teague at Melbourne Victory, and plenty of others. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way Ollie Roos coach Tony Vidmar goes.
The overseas contingent, as you referenced earlier, Dave, they're all familiar faces to listeners of this podcast. Louis Dorigo, Jacob Italiano, Calvin Neuenhoff, Adrian Sigicic, Marco Tilio, Mohamed Touré, Nectar Triantis, and Nishan Volupalai, and Patrick Yazbek.
Oh, now, big chance for City. Marin Yakulis through one-on-one, squares it up. McLaren was never, ever going to miss from there.
Moving back, gents, to Friday night. Let's go begin at the beginning now with Melbourne City against Sydney FC, where Stephen Ugarkovic and Jamie McLaren's two goals earned Aurelio Vidmar a win in his first match in charge of the Premiers. But Sydney FC, Tom, not only nothing to show for the season so far, not even a goal.
No, worrying times, very worrying times for a team that 3-4 weeks ago won the Australia Cup, but seems bereft of ideas. I thought Luke Wiltshire talking on Paramount Plus was very animated and very direct, former Sydney FC, as well as Socceroos fullback, of course, and saying that some of the senior players were non-existent. The kids came on and gave energy and directness, but the senior players, the boys you need to steer a ship through these troubled waters, just seeing lost. Basically, not. And I'd be slightly concerned to hear the coach, Steve Corriger, sort of saying it's a mystery as to why this team, and I know what he means as to why a team that won the Australian Cup fairly convincingly was over the rounds of the Cup so could suddenly be playing so poorly. But that's his job to answer that question. At the moment, it doesn't appear like Sydney have any answers, and they don't seem to be playing like a team who believe that things are going to turn very quickly.
Well, Ryan Grant's words, Dave, were dire straits. It's round three. And to the words are bereft of ideas and probably lacking energy, motivation. These aren't things that we're sort of throwing mud at here from this room, for the comforts of this room. It's kind of been what some of the senior players have alluded to in post-game interviews over the first 3 weeks. It's big questions and concerning for Sydney FC right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, echo your sentiments. I mean, after round three, where, you know, it's very tight, one win can kind of get you in or, you know, on the verge of the top six. Really bizarre language coming out of the Sydney FC sheds. I do recall we did have a bit of a debate in our pre-season preview podcast around the top five and 10 players of the league. Do you recall that debate, Tom?
No.
Okay.
Well, I believe we're trying to come up with five, and we ended up with a range of about 40.
It's a marathon, not a sprint, David.
Yeah. No, I do vaguely recall a Joe Lolly being referenced and some scoffing from certain people on the podcast. How's your thoughts on how he's going thus far this season?
I actually think he's trying too hard. He's snatching at chances. I think that symbolises the way that Sydney are playing at the moment, that they're lacking rhythm, they're lacking a groove, and they're lacking that muscle memory. Case in point, the header at the near post on another day, he comes in at a slightly different angle and he scores that header and Sydney go 1-0 up, but he puts it wide of the post and it just sort of summed up the fact that he's trying too hard to live up to my lofty expectations.
But one of the points of
they were lofty.
one of the talking points of that discussion as well, though, was about the balance between the kids and the senior players, because we actually suggested, Dave, that there were some really good players who had done really well in the Australia Cup run. Now, they've got Adelaide United this weekend, and then they've got Sydney Derby. Now, I don't know how long you persist with what isn't working, but if you were Steve Corriger, gents, would you shake things up this week as a lot? Because they're two frighteningly tough games.
I'm going to look at the league table to answer that and say, if you look at the teams who are down the bottom, the Mariners lost most of their forward line, they lost their coach. Newcastle have got a brand new coach, lost some key players. Western United, a big rebuild. Melbourne City, it was such a shocking start that they've changed coaches. Sydney FC, right at the bottom, haven't really changed anything. They stuck rather than twisted. And everyone agreed that Corriger had done enough to keep going, got into the finals, and then he won the Australia Cup. The issue for Sydney is that they're not bedding things down. They're not bedding in a whole new squad. They're not bedding in a new coach. So how are things going to change if it's the same personnel and not dissimilar tactics to last season, which at the moment aren't really working?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, you know, I think it does make sense to you know, shake it up, make a bit of a statement with the selections, throw some of the, you know, more of the younger players into the mix. But you've also got to be careful with how, you know, that's managed, particularly with the older players, because you can lose the older players if, you know, it's not managed carefully. And, you know, as we, I think, discussed last week, they're in this, you know, really tough in-between period where, you know, they're probably paying for not getting more games into some of the younger players, more games and more minutes, you know, into some of the younger players. And sometimes the minutes can be bringing players on 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes earlier than they otherwise would. So, yeah, it's a really tough situation for Steve Corrick. I mean, you know, he's got plenty of silverware. He's got experience. He's clearly got respect from the players. But, yeah, they're going to have to turn things around pretty soon because, yeah, the I mean, yeah, it doesn't look great. The language, the body language coming out of Sydney FC is not looking great at the moment. And when you contrast that with Melbourne City, I mean, I guess we need to reference the fact that this time last week, Rado Vidicic was in charge. And obviously they made the call. Aurelio Vidmar was installed as coach. And, you know, I think you definitely have to, you know, factor some of that in to that result and performance. I think there was clearly a reaction from the Melbourne City players. You know, for whatever reason, things just went pear-shaped under Rado. You know, I mean, you can, I guess, go back as far as, you know, last season's grand final. Certainly some really dire results and performances at the start of the season. But that performance from Melbourne City on Friday night was what you've come to expect from them. And when you look at the squad that they've got, and they've got the likes of, you know, Lecky and Naboot, you know, to come back in over the next, you know, 1 or 2 months, they're still a threat for mine when it comes to the championship. And I think, you know, Aurelio Vidmar is a pretty shrewd appointment for them.
It was a sense of back to basics about that performance. As I mentioned before, the second goal was classic City. But and as they grew in confidence through that second half, once they were 2 goals up and they started to, the movement returned up front, you could see it was more like the pattern of play that you expect from City. And Sydney were struggling to hold on to them. And I think they will just grow from this, as long as Aurelio doesn't overcomplicate things, which I don't think he will, and basically go back to the patterns that they're used to for now. I think they'll really grow from this.
Great to have Aurelio Vidmar back in the league after 13 years. You know, a legend of Australian football. I thought Michael Petrillo's comments prior and during the game were really interesting too, talking quite candidly about how, you know, Rado Vidicic and him spoke during the week, and that they were struggling with the dressing room, and they decided mutually it was a way to part, and giving some insight there into some fans. And it's also interesting because this time last week we were speaking in similar tones about Melbourne City to what we are about Sydney FC, and they've gone and made a very, very tough call early, and it looks like over the, you know, based on 90 minutes, only 90 minutes, but they might be back to, you know, something more what we are used to. So some big decisions and some big moments coming ahead for Sydney FC as they try to navigate these choppy waters.
3-on-2 if they're good enough, MacArthur. Drew with the perfect ball, and how about this save from Tom Hewitt-Bell? Denies his certain Bulls goal.
Earlier on Saturday as well, MacArthur 1, Western United 0. Now this is one, Tom, where I thought Hewitt-Bell, who you referenced earlier, was going to send us to probably a deadlocked result, which probably would have been a good result for Western, and probably, you know, I think MacArthur had done enough to get a few goals in the first half. I mean, Sojovsky said as much. For Western, whilst it was a good bounce back from the week before in terms of application, another loss, Ali Oglar's 90th minute winner maintains Milos Sojovsky's very, very, very sound start to life in charge this season.
Essentially, MacArthur did a Western United on Western United.
Good. Yeah.
From a couple of years ago, that they hung on, they were defensively good, they probed, they did create chances, and if it wasn't for Tom Hewitt-Bell, yeah, that MacArthur would have been out of sight. But they kept plugging away, and they got that goal, which on the balance of you'd say they probably deserved, if it wasn't for Hewitt-Bell's heroics earlier. Neither side really gave a really strong advert for storming on through the season and being a title threat. But certainly from Western's point of view, after the horror show the other week, this was a far more convincing structural display, and there's individual elements to be for John Aloisi to be happy with, if not the overall, you know, the overall score. For Mile Sojovski, they're still building from finishing bottom last year, and I think they are determined not to forget where they've come from in that sense, that they really do need to build bit by bit.
Dave, also a big week for Macarthur still coming up. They've got an AFC Cup clash on Thursday against Phnom Penh coming up at home, but some very solid signs to start the season.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for the Macarthur squad, and particularly some of the younger players. I mean, Raphael mentioned earlier in the Ollie Roos chat, you know, he seems to have relished the regular game time. Jake Holman was, again, outstanding, yeah, I thought, over the weekend, and just a guy who's really exciting to watch. He, you know, he gets the ball, he pins his ears back, he takes players on, he's, you know, able to beat people one-on-one. Love watching him play. But, yeah, again, Ali Ugla coming off the bench, and that was an outstanding finish from him. That was a you know, he's 21, but hasn't played a lot of football. But the composure to round the keeper to take advantage of that, defensive mistake from Western United and then put it past Hewitt Bell, who was outstanding, as you referenced, Tom. That was top notch from Ugla. So a huge win for Macarthur. Plenty of positives to take from that match. Hewitt Bell was really interesting. Like, I think he's worth touching on because he hasn't played a heap of football. He's not young. He's in his mid-20s. But, you know, the word from Western United is that he's a guy that, you know, maybe lacked a little bit of confidence, which has perhaps come from not playing regular football. But, you know, some of his saves the other night were absolutely outstanding, including that one from Raphael. So, yeah, look, plenty of positives from both of those sides. And just when we talk of the Vidmars, we saw Kane Vidmar getting his first start also for Western United and did really well. He can claim that he can put his hand up and claim that he had a clean sheet because he came off just before Macarthur scored the winner. But a big week for the Vidmars. We've referenced the three of them on this podcast alone, with Tony coaching the Ollie Roos, son Kane getting his first start for Western, of course Aurelio back in the mix after 6 years over in Asia.
Australian football royalty. Didn't use the word legend earlier loosely. Stiff on Ben Garuccio, who obviously slipped over in the lead up to that excellent finish, but fine margins and all that, and Macarthur take the points on Saturday afternoon. Earlier, Wellington 5, Brisbane 2.
Kington sets up Zavada, and it won't be the best finish of his career, but Oscar Zavada has a hat-trick.
Now, this was an enjoyable game. This was an interesting game for a number of reasons. Oscar Zavada with his first hat-trick for the Phoenix. Tim Payne with a brilliant strike to pick things back after Florian Berenguer scored before you'd even had your tea bag out of your tea. He was already on the scorecard. So tremendous character and quality from the Knicks to find their way back into this game and then ahead. I want to touch, guys, on a couple of things. First of all, Tom, Wellington's performance, going a goal down and then showing that they can find their way out of any circumstances. That they found a way, played around Brisbane's press and showed once again that they are not to be underestimated in this Isuzu Uday League.
I think it's important to clarify, first of all, that the key is to have your teabag done well before the opening whistle. I mean, it's just basic professionalism. But talking of basic professionalism, the way that Wellington have segued from the Talley era to the Italiano era is terrific. That nobody would have picked them to have started like they have to score five goals. That's a really good thing in terms of if the Wellington faithful were a little uncertain, they've got to go and watch, because they are scoring goals and they're playing nice football. They're getting in behind. They were helped by a couple of moments from Brisbane, and we should get on to Ross Aloisi's very colourful press conference after the game later. Poor Tom Aldred, who, you know, has been outstanding for them for years. That's one horrible mistake for the second goal, I think it was, which, you know, changes the course of the game and the balance of the game. But from a Wellington point of view, to score five goals, and several of them excellent goals, and a first goal for Tim Payne. That's 93 A-League games He's a good guy, so I'm pleased to see him get on the score sheet.
And he's doing really well at right back. Both fullbacks are doing really well for Wellington at the moment. And that changed the dynamic of the game, Dave. Zavada scored a hat-trick. They've shown as well Wellington top of the club championship right now across both the A-League men and the A-League women. So this is the club in rude health at the moment. And I want to touch just a bit on what you said, Tom, where the questions were coming into the season, you know, what impact Talai's departure would make. And Giancarlo Italiano has picked up where he's left off. They are a team that is hard to beat and can play some good football too.
Yeah, I mean, unlike Tom, I'm happy to, you know, admit when I get things wrong, and I'll put my hand up and admit that, you know, I probably got things wrong with Wellington United. I probably wrote them off at the start of the season off the back of Talai leaving. Italiano, you know, I said they were big shoes to fill, but their start to the season has been outstanding. And Zavada was, he was touch and go apparently for that game with a back injury, but thankfully he did play. I'm not sure if he got a jab or what before that game. Wasn't the sexiest hat-trick you'll ever see. I mean, that third one, the one he completed, it kind of almost went over the crossbar. But he just seems so composed in those finishing situations. And he's a really curious player in that he's 27. This stint at Wellington is clearly his most prolific stint from, you know, any of his clubs. He's played a lot of his football over in Poland. He came through the German system at Wolfsburg, I think it was. So, you know, he's clearly enjoying his football, enjoying his time at Wellington. Whether he, you know, decides to move on overseas or I guess to Asia or Europe again, who knows? But, you know, if Wellington can hang on to him, I mean, he's the kind of guy that can, you know, take them pretty far. And it's a really interesting time at the moment for Wellington and for New Zealand football. We've got Auckland coming into the competition next season. They'll make some big announcements over coming weeks and months, and they'll look to start signing players up for their inaugural season. So it really sets up for what could be a mouth-watering, you know, New Zealand derby from next season onwards.
And what about my boy Bojidar Krajev? That's the best goal of the game, in my view. I love his arrogance. I love the way he preens, and I just love his way and the football that he plays. Probably not. We don't see it often enough, but a moment like that, I think, is just pure class.
And why is he your boy?
Because I interviewed him when he first arrived, and just loved him. I think he's just sort of, you know, got that I'm brilliant and why not sort of attitude.
You got a lot of boys, well, Dave. That really, you'd have a lot of boys, Dave, if that was the criteria for having sons.
People, I mean, that's quite an extraordinary claim from Tom, but that was I do agree with him. That was an outstanding finish. I mean, I think he had Zavada and a couple of options on the left. I mean, Brisbane were scrambling defensively, and as you mentioned, Tommy Aldred was really battling the other day. And you know, when you've got so many young players in a Brisbane Roar squad, you need your experienced players to, you know, to really step up. But look, they will be inconsistent. Ross Aloisi, as you mentioned, strong comments after the game. But yeah, I think they'll be okay, Brisbane Roar. You will get that inconsistency that you do sometimes get with kids, but I think they'll be competitive this season.
Just on the difference, I mean, Aldred, that's a rare mistake for him. I just want to touch one more thing on the mentality of Wellington. There was a moment where Alex Paulson, who we've talked about, waxed lyrical about for a couple of weeks on this show, called away, as a goalkeeper does, one of his defenders, where there wasn't much pressure on him. And his centre-back, Sutton, gave him absolute both barrels, which you could hear through the television cameras. And I thought, you know what, they're a tough team. They've got high standards, strong mentality. And Alte, Rufa and Pennington in the middle of the park just provide a really good foundation for them to build on, particularly as they looked to get their way back into the game, which at the same time, Brisbane didn't adjust to. And I found Ross Aloisi's comments, you can watch them on aleagues.com.au now, were fascinating because you've got different ways. Carl Viet's come out and vastly defended his players. Steve Corrick has come out and says, I'm not sure what's wrong. It's really interesting, Tom, looking at the way different coaches do things. And Ross Aloisi's come out and had a crack at his players for probably lacking the conviction of, in his view, of doing what he's always told them to do, which is to play forward, play through the lines, look forward, attacking play. I don't know if you guys remember, we're talking probably 10 years ago, where Luke Devere gave away a goal for Brisbane Roar and Ange Postecoglou came out and goes, I love it. I'm going to back him because I told him to do that. This kind of felt like the reverse of that. Ross Aloisi wants his players to do that, and maybe on this occasion he felt like they weren't.
an interesting phrase to use. You know, the players are scared and he wants them to be braver on the ball. I think if you want players to be brave on the ball, then you need to make them feel that whatever happens, they're going to be backed. And that clearly is Postecoglou's masterstroke and continues to be wherever he goes. Ross obviously has not done this off the cuff. I mean, this is a deliberate policy. And there is the argument that at least he's showing some sort of fire and setting high standards, making demands of his players. But I'm surprised that so early in his tenure, when he's asking to play in a brave way, and be brave on the ball, that he's had such quite a crack at them.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I think his line was, if you play with courage and lose, or, you know, if you don't play with courage and you lose, I mean, what's the difference? You may as well play with courage, something along those lines. But, yeah, I mean, you don't know what conversations were had, you know, in the sheds before he went out to the press conference. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the most outrageous crack that I've ever heard. But, yeah, it was an interesting ploy, interesting tactic. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they react off the back of that.
Interesting in just how deliberate it was, clearly, it looked like. So we'll see what a response that elicits later that night.
Squares it, tag it, shooting range, scoring range. And that will do it for the Perth Glory.
Four games on Saturday. Perth Glory beat Central Coast 2-0 with second half goals to Stefan Kolakowski and Adam Taggart. Taggart had one ruled offside just in the lead up to that, and then got his 90th minute goal, which included a game against the Mariners where Angel Torres saw red. The last thing Mark Jackson needed, Tom, was to have another attacking player, or lose another attacking player going forward. Let's start with Perth. Achieve the game plan. Hit them on the break. Brilliant on the break. 2-0 win at home. Positive vibes after, of course, Alan Stajic dropping Ollie Sauer for the youngster Cook as well.
Yeah, Cameron Cook had a terrific game. And it's interesting that Mark Jackson talks about his players needing to step up and they're lacking a natural number nine and be disappointed in his players, because actually Cameron Cook was the difference. I think several of those saves, if he doesn't make one or two of those, Mariners probably score, probably win. And then everything looks very, very different. I thought Stajic sort of summed it up very well when he said they'd actually played better in the first two games, but they got the run of the green slightly, and they took the chances. They hitting on the break, and then a goal very late on where the Mariners are sort of kind of going to pieces a bit with the sending off, and that you could sense it wasn't going to be their day. But most importantly for Stajic, coming into Perth, overhauling the squad, been a very, very difficult time. I don't think we can underestimate how hard it's been in terms of the questions over the ownership, people not knowing where the club's going to go, all that kind of thing. Those questions have now been settled. He's shepherded the team through that. He's rebuilding the team. He brought back in Stefan Kolakowski, and it was so good to see that smile back on his face after such a miserable year last year. So as usual, Starch is building foundation strongly.
And making tough calls still. Dropping Ollie Sauer as well is a big call, Dave. Cameron Cook, you'd now have to say, has the number one jersey for the time being based on that performance, you'd have to suspect. But also still, interestingly, constructively critical of his side after the game as well. Didn't like that they had probably dropped back more than he probably wanted to. And so some really interesting comments there as they build into his tenure.
Yes, that's showing that he's not scared to make the big calls. I mean, Cameron Cook does have, you know, over 20 A-League games under his belt, but nonetheless, Ollie Sale was a big off-season signing. So good competition for spots there in the goalkeeping position. But yeah, I mean, so many positives to take out of that one from Perth Glory. I think Stad would have been happy, but that was his way of, you know, just keeping their feet on the ground. Adam Taggart, I think he's a massive positive for them. The way he's come out of the blocks this year, he hasn't been super prolific, but, you know, a couple of goals. There was a fantastic finish on the weekend and an assist for Kolakowski as well. He just looks, this is as happy as I've seen Adam Taggart. And even after, you know, Kolakowski scores that goal, probably says a bit about Kolakowski and how popular he is in that change room. And I think he had some real challenges last year because he was, you know, essentially ostracized and the players getting around him. So it does appear to be a real strong team unity there, but the way Taggart went over to him and celebrated with him, you know, was a real positive. Another interesting one was Riley Warland. The assist for Taggart's goal, he only came on a few minutes earlier, and he's won. This is his third stint at Perth Glory, yet he's only 21. A huge talent. He's had challenges off the field, but the way he He was a little step over in there. There was a fantastic bullet pass to tag it, you know, before. He still had a bit to do. It was outside the penalty box. But Warland's a really interesting one. If he can kind of remain on the... Yeah, I mean, remain on the right path, and you know, they may have unearthed the gem there, because you know he can play. He's probably a more natural left back than a Shushnyar, who's more of a, you know, defensive central defensive player. Yeah, another good local boy who we thought was lost to the system, was playing in the local WA NPL system. But yeah, a real positive for them.
And on the Mariners, just to round up the coaching discussion, the approaches to the press conferences, obviously Jackson went pretty hard on the fact that we're struggling for an out-and-out goal scorer. Reference Jason Cummings hasn't left. But on another night, Tom, they did create chances. They could have been – this game could have had a different, you know, a different shape to it on another night. Do you subscribe to that? Do you think it's a bit of smoke screen? Do you think, you know, the Mariners are, you know, they're in a similar position to Sydney FC, but are they in a similar position to Sydney FC, if you know what I mean?
The fact they lost so many players and lost the coach in the off season, and such a successful coach, gives them, I think, a lot of leeway. The interesting thing from Mark Jackson is still interim coach. That situation still got to be resolved, which makes, you know, the stridency of his comments even more interesting. I'm surprised that so early in his tenure that he's prepared to be so strong, but maybe that's what he feels his players need. And that, you know, I thought Marco Tullio was terrific, was everywhere, was trying to create. And, you know, you've got to, not dissimilar to the Aaron Kunda thing, Angel has to learn when he's running down the centre, he gets a shirt tug, the rep is behind the referee's back. It's annoying. It's happened to everybody who's ever played a game of football, but you can't react. But it wasn't the world's biggest slap. It was more of a push to the back of the head, but everyone knows as soon as you raise a hand. And that's lack of professionalism, which is going to cost his team, because he could get a couple of game ban, and then, you know, he's out, maybe loses his place. But he's come in as the replacement for one of these star names who's gone out, and so far hasn't really lit the league up. And now he's not going to light anything up, because he's going to be sitting on the sideline.
Brisbane, big chance! 2-2! Marcus Antonsen! And they have come from behind. 2 goals behind Western Sydney Wanderers.
We round out with Newcastle and Western Sydney playing a 2-2 draw. Newcastle shot out to a 2-0 lead thanks to a brace from the very impressive Apostolos Stamatopoulos in the first half. But Josh Brillante, Marcus Antonsen got the draw there for Western Sydney, Dave. Well, I don't want to say it a tale of two halves, but it was a tale of two halves. Newcastle, excellent on the counter-attack. Trent Bahagia on another night could have sealed 3 points, but in the end, the Wanderers proving that they are also going to be hard to beat, even if they're not at their very best.
Yeah, the Jets are really interesting this year. Probably a better start than I expected from them. They haven't, you know, translated that into too many points, but I think once they, you know, get a bit of a groove and a bit of stability, that, I mean, they're just going to continue to be a hard team to come up against. Stamatopoulos, he's a really, really interesting one. He's been in Greece for the last couple of years, looks to be a great find for them. I mean, we remember he came onto the scene 6 or so years ago with Adelaide United and showed huge promise. Not sure his decision to join Western United, the expansion club at the time, was the shrewdest decision, because he was, you know, in the back of a queue of fantastic attacking players led by Bessart Berisha and, you know, Alessandro Diamanti, etc. So he hasn't played a lot of games, but, you know, looks like he will get the opportunity to lead the line for Newcastle Jets this season. And, you know, the way he's going, I think he's good in the air. I think he's pretty decent with his feet. He's definitely got the potential to give them a, you know, 10 goal plus return, which they need, you know, if they're going to be competitive, if they're going to give the top six a shake. But yeah, a lot of positives for them. And for the Wanderers, you know, I think they probably expect to take 3 points from a game like that. But in saying that, coming from behind, positives. I mean, Antonsen with an outstanding finish. I mean, you know, those two touches, bang, bang, really clinical. And, you know, Hendricks, the Dutchman in midfield, Dutch cap midfielder, you know, he just looks an absolute class act. And another one who I think will get better as the season wears on.
You mentioned in the preseason show, Tom, Brandon O'Neill is a reference point for the Newcastle Jets. And I thought his interview after the game was lovely. Clearly, as an experienced pro supporter, they let a 2-goal lead slip. But his comments about, I think there's loads more positives the negatives for that result shows that he knows he's playing with a young team. He knows that in Robbie Stanton that they have a team that is a work in progress. But there was in every game they've played, there have been fits and starts of some terrific signs from them that they're going to give their fans a journey this year. They're going to give their fans something to get around.
Did a very interesting chat with Brandon just before the season launch, actually, it was, and him talking about his dreams for the season, and it was to continue to enjoy his football because he went through a very miserable period, lost his father, sort of lost his way a bit, wasn't happy at Perth, felt like he had to leave Perth, the city, in order to sort of re-establish himself in football and re-find the joy, and he has refound it, and he's enjoying. He knows Robbie Stanton well from Sydney FC days. He's enjoying the responsibility and what they're trying to build. And it's going to be an up and down process. The budgets, the level of players they've been able to sign, or rather to fill their squad with, dictates that. They're not going to take the competition by storm, but hopefully they will build and they'll play some good football. And with the pace they have up front, they're going to scare any team who they come up against.
Pace and width look really sharp in moments too. So a terrific way to end the weekend. Gents, great chatting about Isuzu A-League with you once again. Gone for about an hour, could go for hours, but absolute pleasure as always to talk to you both. We can read all of your insights, of course, on aleagues.com.au over the week. Don't forget, as you're listening, Unite Round tickets, they are out for members from Monday morning. So if you're a member, get around that. If you're thinking about coming to Sydney, it should be an absolute treat there. 3 days of back-to-back games across the Liberty A-League and the Isuzu Ute A-League. And of course, the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast feed returns on a Thursday for you with the guys talking about the week ahead through a fantasy lens. So much for you guys to stay in touch with the league across all of our platforms on digital and social as we build up towards next weekend. Another big round, Melbourne Victory hosting Wellington to get it underway at Amy Park on Friday night. Saturday, triple header, Western United against Newcastle, Western Sydney against Perth, and Adelaide United against Sydney FC is the main game on what should be a packed Cooper Stadium. Melbourne City host Macarthur at Amy Park on Sunday afternoon in the 10 bold slot at 3 p.m, and it rounds out with Central Coast against Brisbane at Industry Group Stadium at 5 p.m. on Sunday. Lots to look forward to. Tom, Dave, thank you for your time. Any final words of wisdom?
Just great to share the podcast with Tom once again after he was missing last week.
I tell you, I have a week off just to give you a bit of time in the spotlight, Dave, and you just admitted that every one of your preseason predictions is rubbish.
But at least I put my hand up, Tom, and admitted it.
He also admitted all the ones of yours that were rubbish too. So we're all equal, all ready to go through and wipe through that preseason podcast. Thank you for your time today. Enjoy everything around aleagues.com.au and keepup.com.au this week. And until the next episode of the podcast, enjoy your football.